Welcome back, everyone. And welcome back to Tanya. We're going to get back to Tanya now. So what I want to do, I actually was a little bit confused where we actually have to, but because we haven't done it for a while.
I thought my book might
be. It's too late. What does it say? I'm interested.
I think a little recap.
Yeah, chapter 12.
We chapter 12?
Yeah.
Serious?
Serious.
I thought it was chapter 9.
Yeah,
we'll go to chapter 9. Let's do that. Okay. What I actually want to do is, I'm not going to do everything inside, because I want it a little bit moved, otherwise it's going to bog down. So we'll see. We'll cover the whole content, obviously, but...
For people like me, could you give me a page number?
Yes, no, we're going to do that. page 26 in these books. The page numbering in this book is not fantastic, but for some reason. 26, does it say Perek Tes? Good. Okay. Yeah, I think it's better if we start from here because we'll get a... Yeah. Okay, so... The Tanya... let's give a bit of a recap here. The Tanya is a book called the Book of Beinonim. It's right away in chapter 1, it redefined what the word Beinoni is. Normally a Beinoni is always understood in the clinical legislative sense. It's understood as someone who is got half mitzvahs and half averus, right? Which is... what he calls in Perek Aleph the borrow term, when the Rambam talks about tzaddikim who are meritorious in judgment and rishoyim, wicked people who aren't, and the beinoni who kind of gets a second chance between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. So that's how he explains it, that a tzaddik is someone who's got most mitzvahs, the Rosh Hashanah is a person who's got most transgressions, and a beinoni is half-half. But he proved from many sources that that's just a sort of a borrow description, that's not the real essence and definition of the word. And the real definition of the word was as follows, that really... And the Tanya definition sounds very strong and very harsh and very unachievable when he's first started, but it's okay. That's the point, as we've explained many, many times, that Tanya goes for the top bar and then we work towards it. That's our mission. But essentially, Rasha, the word, not wicked, but the word for Rasha, is really anyone who transgresses, someone who disconnects himself from Hashem in any way. The Tzaddik is someone who's completely transformed, who doesn't even have a... He's controlled, he's completely conquered his Yetzirah, so he doesn't even want to do anything bad, right? But the real essence of a Beinoni, which a Beinoni in a sense is the regular person, the aspiration of the regular Jew, that's what it means, right? Is to move from Russia to Beinoni, which means, what's a Beinoni? A Beinoni is someone who has the struggle between the godly soul and the animal soul, but doesn't give in to the temptation. So essentially, and he's going to explain that a bit later in chapter 12. But in order to explain that, we started a whole process of from chapter end of chapter 1 to chapter 2 and so on, explaining that we have two souls. The souls is Nefesh HaLakis, Nefesh HaBamis, the godly soul, the animal soul, and what each one has and how the makeup of each one works. And we learned that each one has 10 powers, the three intellectual powers, Chochmah, Binah, Das, the seven emotional powers, chesed, word, tiferes, and so on. And then the levushim, the means of expression, which is thought, speech, and action. And he went into that whole concept, and he also explained the difference between kedusha and klippa. Klippa means something which is conceals Hashem, which essentially there's two types of klippa. There are those klippas which are completely klippa, or sitra achra, as we explained, which means that they're not permitted, they're completely, I don't know if the word is evil, but they're completely... dark, and they're not transformable. That's why we have to stay away from them. Whereas you have something called klipas noiga, which is a mixture of bad and good, which is all the neutral stuff. In fact, most of our engagement in life is with klipas noiga. When we eat, when we sleep, when we do business, when we walk in the street, when we have recreation, all this stuff. That's all neutral, which means it's not godliness, not like a mezuzah or a piece of tefillin. It's something that's neutral and can go either way. So when we don't do it, L'shem Shemayim, when we don't use it for the sake of heaven, we don't eat for the sake of heaven, we don't engage in the physical world for the sake of heaven, then it draws us down to the level of complete klippa. When we use it for the proper reason, then it elevates, and we're able to capture the sparks and elevate the sparks, and elevates us to a higher level of kedusha, right? And he went through a bit of a process explaining, giving examples, and what is the definition of complete klippa, and neutral klippa, and so on and so forth. Okay. Now, before we go on, before we start chapter 9, just to remind you of a thing, right? So we talk about these two souls, which is really the whole Tanya is about the struggle between these two souls. He doesn't talk about the Yetzer Hara and Yetzer Tov. Now, of course, we have the Yetzer Hara and we have Yetzer Tov, but they're different. Right? It's important to understand. The reason it's important to understand is this, because the Yetzer Hara, which we always talk about, that's our evil inclination, the drive within us that pushes us to do things that are wrong, that are against Hashem, that are avarious, right? That's not the animal soul. That's an outcome of the animal soul. It's different, right? In other words, our animal soul, in its essence, when we're born, our animal drive, which is the drive we have to exist, it's also the drive we have where ego exists as well, is klipa. It is klipa, as explained in the very, very beginning of Tanya, meaning it's not godly by default. It's klipas noiga. It's the neutral klipa, because it can go either way. But it's our instincts. It's our impulsiveness. It's our drive just to exist materially and physically. But it's not essentially evil. Right? It's not essentially evil. If we don't work with it, if we don't train it, if we don't achieve dominance over it, we don't channel it, then it gives rise to the Yetzer Hara. In other words, the Jewish Nefesh HaBamis doesn't naturally, by default, drive us to do anything essentially evil. It just drives us to be us. Us, self, I mean in the klipa sense, self, right? The egocentric self, right? If we don't work with it, however, it strengthens the Yetzer Hara. The Yetzer Hara is the drive to the evil, the drive to do something wrong, to actually do an avera, right? However, it is considered foreign to being a Yid, because a Yid by nature wants to do what Hashem wants, really, right? It's the Yetzer Hara that's an outcome, it's an outgrowth, so to speak, of an uncontrolled and unworked with Nefesh HaBamis, right? That's number one. Number two, as we'll soon learn, the Yetzer Hara is a drive to do with action. The Nefesh HaBamis is more a drive to do about who we are. Like what's our mindset? What's our whole way of thinking, right? So the same thing goes with the Nefesh HaLakis and the Yetzer Tov, the godly soul and the Yetzer Tov. The Yetzer Tov is an inclination that says, do a mitzvah, you know, light Shabbos candles, give tzedakah, put up a mezuzah, keep Shabbos, whatever. Well, that, the Yetzer Tov is asking us to do good things. But it's coming from a much deeper thing. The two souls are much deeper than just the two inclinations. First of all, they're both outgrowths of the soul, but the soul means, who are we? What's our frame of mind? What's our drive? What's our whole mindset? What's our drive in life? Right? So the neshama, the nefesh of the kisses mindset is to be godly. Not just about doing mitzvahs, to be godly all the time. Right? The Nefesh HaBamis is to be not godly, is to be material. It's deeper than the, just an action driver. Yeah, am I making sense? Okay. So in order to understand that and understand the struggle between them, he, per test, what he does is, he now starts to talk about where in the body is the headquarters of each neshama. Right? Now the reason that he does that, what's the difference where it is? I mean, what's the difference? Obviously, both souls have an impact on the entire body and the entire life experience. So why do I need to know, like, where it rests, where's the headquarters? But it's important because, as we'll see, the two souls are very different in personality. Not just by the fact that they're very different between one being godly and one not being godly, but they're also different in how they work in terms of what's the dominant energy within them. Yeah? It'll become clear as we go along, but am I making sort of sense? Okay. So let's see. It says like this. V'hine, beginning of practice. Mekoyim mishkan nefesh habamis. The place and the resting place, so to speak, of the animal soul, shumi klipas noiga, which comes from klipas noiga. B'chol ish yisrael in every Jew who believes in the heart. Nefesh habamis, the animal soul, starts in the heart. Which part of the heart? Now, I'm not a biologist or a doctor or anything, but apparently that's what we learn. B'cholol smoli shehu mole dam. It's in the left side of the heart, which is filled with blood. Apparently the way it works is we have two, what's it called, ventricles or something? I failed biology in school, so this is stuff that's good. Yeah, and the blood first comes to the right side, but then it goes to the lung, and it's got air, and then it goes through the left side to the whole body. Is that correct? Okay, there you are. And therefore, the left side is called the headquarters of blood, basically, right? And that's where the Nefesh HaBamis is. Because blood, we know, is life. Physical life is in the blood, right? The vibrancy of life comes through the blood. The Pasuk says, Ki Adam Hu HaNefesh. And that's why that's the central part of the Nefesh HaBamis. And it starts from the, specifically from the blood. And blood also represents the concept of passion, enthusiasm, excitement, emotion, essentially, right? You say my blood boils, right? That's a sign of emotion, right? And that's what the Nefesh HaBamis does. It takes that passion, we'll see what that passion is, that form of midas, that form of emotion, and spreads it to the rest of the body, which is what the left ventricle of the heart does. It spreads the blood, it sends it and flows it throughout the veins, and all that, right? Uksiv, and it's written in the Pasuk, as he says, Ki Adam Hu HaNefesh. The blood is the soul. The soul is in the blood. The Nefesh HaBamis is in the blood of the person. But it starts from the heart. It starts from the seat and the headquarters of what we call emotion, right? By the way, interesting thing, that part of the blood is always, that part of the heart always has blood in it. And I didn't realize, I always wonder what the explanation of this is, but I saw this in one of the commentaries of Tanya. There's a number of Gemaras that talks about a person having a revius of dam. To be like central for life, central to be alive is a revius of blood. Now, revius is a very small measurement. It's like 100 mils, right? Now, I don't think a person can exist in 100 mils of blood, right? And I've always wondered what the Gemara means by that, right? But apparently what it means is, it doesn't mean throughout the body. It means that that part of the heart always has a revius of blood in it. And that's the minimum. If a person doesn't have a revius of blood in that part of the heart, then that's it, right? The heart stops working. So that's what the Gemara means. It's an interesting thing. Okay. Now let's continue. V'lochein, therefore, he says, therefore, kol hatayvus, all of the desires of a person, v'spoyrus, and all of the arrogance of a person, feeling of haughtiness, v'kas and anger, all those kind of things with the man, hein balev. They start from the blood. They start from the heart. Umme halev, and from the heart. They spread through the body, right? Now, let me learn one more sentence. I'm going to explain this. The gam oile lemoich shavarosh. When it spreads to the body, it also spreads to the brain, right? That blood flow goes to the brain as well, of course, which is lachshev, because that's important. Lachshev laharer bohen uli schakim bohen. In order to think about them and to scheme and to plan how to execute those emotions. What does this mean? It means like this. We learned before that the soul, we first learned it about the Nefesh HaLakis, the godly soul, has three intellectual powers, Chochma min Adas, which are in the brain, and then seven emotions, which are in the heart. In those seven emotions itself, there's the different divisions. The first six are mainly in the heart, the seventh is the Malchus, the recipient, and that sort of leads to action and so on. And then we learned that whatever Hashem creates in the side of Kedusha, He creates in the side of Klippa, which means the Nefesh HaBamis, which is Klippa, the animal soul also has 10 midos, right? Three intellectual powers, Chochmah min Adas, and seven emotions. Now in Perek Gimel, in the third chapter, we learned about the 10 powers of Nefesh HaLakis. There he was very emphatic that Chochmah and Bina, the two main intellectual powers, is called mother and father, or father and mother, right? Why they're called, and the midos are called children. And the reason for that is because the seichel, the intellect, gives birth to emotion. And the analogy he gave there was that if a person will think deeply, using chachma bina, and then eventually they're using das, which is real connection to what I'm thinking about, and internalizing it, and being immersed in it, and being lost in the ideas, etc., it'll give birth to love of Hashem and fear of Hashem, which is chesed and gevura, which of course in turn will motivate the keeping of mitzvahs, right? And learning Torah and so on and so forth. Which means that if I think about the greatness of Hashem, and he mentioned a few things, Hashem encompasses the whole world, and the Malakala, and so on and so on and so forth, which is really most of what Chassidus is all about, it will give birth to wanting to love Hashem and become close to Hashem. Which is the whole thing of the Rambam. The Rambam gives the famous question about how can Hashem command us to love Him. You can't really command someone to have an emotion. You can command someone to do something, but it's hard to, you can't say like like the color of that chair. I don't like it. What am I supposed to do? Right? But the Rambam explains the famous thing, and Chassidus picks up on this and really talks about it a lot, that the sivui, the commandment of Hashem, v'ahavta Hashem alekecha, in Shema, is not about, it's not the commandment is not to have the emotion, the commandment is to do something to create the emotion. To learn about Hashem, to learn about the greatness of Hashem as much as we possibly can, how much Hashem is infinitely greater than the world, the insignificance of the materialism and the significance of Hashem, and etc., etc., etc. And then obviously, you understand that the only thing worth pursuing and the only worth being attracted to is Hashem, and godliness, and learning, and Torah mitzvahs, and so on. That's how it works, right? Now, that's true with the Nefesh of the Kis, but that's not exactly how it works with the Nefesh of Abamis. And that's why it's so important to understand this. That's why it goes to this thing about where the Nefesh HaBamis has its headquarters, so to speak, and where the Nefesh HaKis has its headquarters, right? The Nefesh HaBamis, it doesn't work like that, that the brain gives birth to the emotion. Because the Nefesh HaBamis starts with emotion, right? When someone says something not nice to you and you get very and you feel very angry, right, you suddenly have that emotion of tremendous anger. That's not because you sat down and learned and studied it for 3 weeks and decided it's really important to be angry now. And eventually filled my heart with anger. No. The anger is an instinctive response that comes directly from the Nefesh HaBamis. Right? Now, the Nefesh HaKis also has instinctive emotions, but they're different. You can explain later in Tanya. We do have something called a hidden instinctive love of Hashem, because that's just what a Jew is. But it's very hard to reveal it, and it's very hard to be conscious of it, unless you use the brain. The brain has to reveal it and give birth to it. The Nefesh HaBamis is the opposite way around. The Nefesh HaBamis is instinctively emotional. That's why it's called the animal soul. Animals are emotional beings. They're instinctively emotional, impulsive beings. And because it's by default emotional, that's why the emotions are impulsive and instinctive. And without thinking, right? So it starts with the heart, and that's what he says. And it goes to the rest of the body, become oile lamoyach. But it goes up to the brain. Why? The brain is just now to serve the heart, really. It's to work out, right? It's to work out how I'm going to express my anger. Am I going to scream at you? Am I going to knock you over the head? What am I going to do with the anger, right? That's why even an animal has some degree of the intellect. Needs to know, right? If a cow gets really enraged, needs to know where to go. That's the brain, right? But the beginning is the heart. Also, the maturity of the brain will also, he says this a bit earlier in Tanya, he says that we find like if you take a difference between a child and an adult, right? And they work, let's say both are working on the emotions of the Nefesh HaBamis. The emotions of the HaBamis mean that you have a lot of time, you have a lot of desire. You want things. That's Nefesh HaBamis. Wants things. Wants things to enjoy, right? But now it'll be very different between a child who desperately wants a choo-choo train or an adult that wants a Ferrari, right? Actually, there's no difference. The desire is exactly the same. It's small people's toys and big people's toys. But the difference is that the brain is different. It's more mature. So it's more sophisticated. That's all. But in essence, the midah, the emotion is exactly the same. I mean, we're all like that, right? Things we just want to have pleasure is the same. Doesn't matter, a child or an adult. It's just a child. Because emotions are the same. Children are born with emotions, I mean, as they, right? It's intellect that has to mature. And therefore, as the intellect matures, so it shapes the emotions a bit differently. An adult will also throw a tantrum, just not on the floor, kicking and screaming. It'll be a different type of tantrum. Because it has different maturity, but it's the same tantrum. Right? Okay. So that's what he means over here. So that's understanding. That's why it's so important to understand that Nefesh HaBamis starts with the heart. Because its essence, its basis is emotion. And he says it goes to the rest of the body and heart. Kamoi. He says, Kamoi Shadam, just like the blood. Mekoyroi balev, which starts in the heart, and from the heart it spreads to the rest of the limbs, and also goes up to the brain and the head. Okay, so that's the Nefesh HaBamis. Yeah? Nefesh HaKis is very different. Ah, he says, Right? It's that, if you're having following along, it's the small dot over there. Perik in 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 lines from the beginning of the chapter. Ach, mekoyim mishkan nefesh alekis. But the headquarters and the place of dwelling of the godly soul is different. Hu b'moichin sheberosh. It's in the brain. Yeah? U'misham mispashet l'chol evarim. And from there, it also goes to all the limbs. Right? In other words, the nefesh alekis starts with tremendous insight and understanding and consciousness of God, of Hashem, His Torah and His mitzvahs. And then it also spreads, and then therefore intellectually has this amazing desire to connect with Hashem and to be completely subservient to Hashem. And then it spreads that desire to the rest of the body, the gam belev, and also it spreads it to the heart. That's why the nefesh alekis, the brain, gives birth to the heart, meaning the intellect gives birth to the love, right? B'cholol hayamani. In the, but this time it's a different type of emotion. It's the right side of the heart. She'ein bo dam, it doesn't have blood. It's a different type of emotion, right? Because you'll see, the emotion, this is why, he brings it later, but I'll just quickly mention it now. You know that in the Shema we say, right? We should love Hashem with all our heart. And the word levavcha has two times the letter base. Because really in Hebrew, if you want to say your heart, you just have to say lipcha. But it says levavecha, which is two, right? So Rashi brings it already, and the Chazal tell us, because you're supposed to serve Hashem b'shnei yitzarecha, with both your inclinations. Your nefesh, your tovi yitzahara, your nefesh alkis, and your nefesh abamis. Now why is that so important? Because the truth is, there's an advantage that nefesh abamis. You see, the instinctive emotion is much more emotional. Like an animal, right? Or like a child, for example, right? Who has more emotion, a child or an adult? Well, some adults have never outgrown childhood, but a mature adult, normally the emotions are a little bit more calm. Say emotions, but calmer, right? But a child, that why? Because an emotion that is completely instinctive and impulsive is just explosive, right? An emotion that is born out of intellect has a little bit of maturity and therefore the calmness of intellect, right? Therefore, there's the function of nefesh alekis is to understand Hashem and from that to give birth to love of Hashem. But the love of Hashem that it comes straight from the nefesh alekis is somewhat calmer. The trick is, and this is why to love Hashem b'chol avavcha, right? In other words, that's why the emotion of nefesh alekis is only the right hand side of the heart, right? But the idea is to conquer the nefesh abamis also, as we'll say it clearly later. And therefore, once we have love of Hashem, to harness the energy of the nefesh abamis also, that we should have full blown, explosive love of Hashem, which has been harnessed by the godly soul. That's why we have to serve Hashem with the nefesh alekis and the nefesh abamis. There's a pasuk which Chassidus always brings. It's a pasuk that says, "Rav tvuos b'koyach shor." There's a lot of produce in the power of an ox, meaning there's something that the ox can give that the nefesh alekis can't give. Ox referring to nefesh abamis, but it's got to be come from the gardens of the nefesh alekis, of course. Okay. I'm sorry.
Ratzon.
Yeah.
Which sits above.
Yeah, so Ratzon is the background driver of both the Nefesh Abamis and the Nefesh Elokis. In other words, what gets us going, so Ratzon is what we call makiv. It doesn't have, like, it's not internalized in the body. So the part of the Neshama that comes into the body where we feel, so that's the brain, that's the heart, you know, that kind of things, chesed, gurut, verse. But then behind that, on a more transcendent level, on a more background level, encompassing level, is Ratzon and Tainug, which is what drives us to want to think about Hashem, what drives us to want to make the decision to give birth to emotions of godly emotions and so on and so forth. Right?
So does the nefesh abamis have
its own answer? Yeah, it does. At the end, the depth...
Like,
yeah, both. Yeah, but there's a different type of makif. So you know how we talk about the five levels? Nefesh, ruach, neshama, that's our intellect, our midas, and our behavior, and levushim, thought, speech, and action. Then the fourth level, chaya, that's rotzen. And Nefesh HaBamis also has that. However, Nefesh HaBamis doesn't have Yechida. That's only by Yid.
That's
the right. That's why it's the essence of the Nefesh HaKis, which if you connect to the Yechida, everything else falls away. Yeah. Okay, but that's for another. That's another discussion. All right. All right. So let's see. Right. So it says it goes to the Nefesh HaKis in the brain, and it spreads to the rest of the body and to the heart, which is the right part of the heart. Like it says, Lev Chacham LeYaminoi. There's a pasuk in Koheles that says the heart of a wise person is on the right side, right? And that's with reference to Nefesh HaKis, because that's where the heart of the Chacham is, the wise one, which is Nefesh HaKis, right? And what is that? That's for Ihi Avas Hashem, that's the love of Hashem, Kirish Peshal Heves, Pesal Heves, Pelev Maskilim, it's the love of Hashem that is fired up in the heart of those that think, Amevinim, Misboyinim, Bedaitum, those who give really thought and reflect in their das, Asher B'moichim, Bedvarim, and learn and connect the things in their brain with things, Hamo'orim, Misha'avo, things that will awaken the love, the Chain Simchas Levov, and also awaken Simcha, Betiferes Hashem, Ve'adar Go'inu, when you observe the Tiferes, the glory, the beauty of Hashem, and so on and so forth. Right? Kasher Eine HaChochem Asher B'roishay, when the eyes of the wise, it says, Chochem Eino B'roishay, a wise person, his eyes in is in his head. What does that mean? Every person's eyes in his head. What is it? Yeah. It means, it talks about the eyes of insight. So the wise person has eyes in his head, meaning in the brain of his chachma and his bina, and mistaklim bikara de malka, and he has a look at the beauty of Hashem, but the feris lase and the harmony, just the beauty of his greatness, adin cheker, which is infinite, adin sof, and it has no end, v'tachlis, then he will give birth to the heart, which is the love of Hashem, that's a fiery love in the heart, but it's all given birth from the brain, which is Nefesh HaKis. Chain Shar Midus Kadosha Shebelev, and similar with other Midus, the holy Midus, all come hain of the Nefesh HaKis, hain Mechachma, Bina, V'Das, Shebelev. They all come from the Chochma, Bina, and Das of the brain of the Nefesh HaKis. That's the two souls. Now, let's have a look. Ah! Lisa, can I ask you a favor? Just give me a chumash for a second. English chumash. Trying to see if they translate something here. Now he's going to quote a pasuk, and he's going to get into the struggle between the two souls. So when Rivka was pregnant with Yaakov and Esav, so we have the famous pasuk, the famous story, that she became pregnant, and Vayisroitzu Habonim Bekirba, and the children fought, they struggled within her, right? So she didn't know what it was, she didn't know what kind of crazy person this is, she's carrying a comic of their mind, one day's like this, one day like that, right? Because when she used to go past the shul, the whole story. So she went to seek spiritual guidance, and she came to the yeshiva of Shem and Aver. And they told her, no, you're carrying twins. Shnei goyim b'vit, there's two nations in your womb and two powers. And then they said the pasuk, ula'oim mil'oim yematz. The might, the power, will pass from regime to regime. That's how they translate it here. From one regime to the other. Which essentially means that the two regimes cannot be powerful at the same time. And that's been the story of our history, right? When the Eden were powerful, then Esav didn't have the power. When Rome overpowered, then the Eden lost their power. That's how it went, right? And generally, that's always how it worked. This has nothing to do with Tanya. The only exception to that is what people have been studying now is that the Maral mentions about the very, very last Golas of the Eden, Golas Yishmael, where they will have an upper hand while the Eden have power at the same time. So that's a very a very unique thing, which is exactly what's happening now, right? Okay. So I think the Ramak said that it'll be happening when the Yidden have sovereignty in Eretz Yisrael, the Yishmael will raise the head, and that's a very unique thing. That's nothing to do with Esav. Okay, but that's the pasuk with Esav and Yaakov. However, in Chassidus and in Kabbalah, it says it's not just about Yaakov and Esav. This pasuk is about the person themselves, each person, because the Esav and Yaakov fighting within the womb represents the struggle between the two neshamas, between the two souls, the nefesh elokis and the nefesh habamis, and each one fights for absolute sovereignty and absolute power. And this is what he explains now. Let's see a look. Achine eksiv, ula'oim il'oim yemas. Power will go from one regime to another, which means, ki haguf nikro irktano. The body is called a small city. Right? Ukamoi, and in that city, there's two kings fighting for power, fighting for control. Ukamoi shnei malachim. Just like two kings, nilchamim al irachas, are fighting over one area, one city. Shekol echad roitzel lekofsho v'limloch leh, each one wants to conquer it and rule over it. Hainu lahanig yoishveh akirutsoina, which means they want to take control over the city, that the inhabitants of the city should be subservient to their will, to their desires. Sheyisarin l'mashmata, and should listen to everything they do. B'choyil asher yigzar aleim, with everything that they are going to decree. Right? That's how it works in the physical sense. Exactly that's how it works with two souls. Kach shtei hanefoshes, so to the two souls. Ho elekis v'hachiyunis, the godly soul and the material soul. Habamis, the animalistic soul. Shem haklipa, which comes into, it comes from klipa. In other words, the elokis, the godly soul and the animalistic soul. Nilchomois zu im zu, fight with each other. Ala guf ve'ala ivora, on the body and its organs and its limbs. Right? Now, just to reflect on what he's saying here, right? It's important to understand. Why is it important to understand? See, you can only win a war if you understand the strategy. Right? Before we can understand the struggle between Nefesh HaLakis and Nefesh HaBamis, or more importantly, before we can even understand the strategy to giving dominance to the Nefesh HaLakis over the Nefesh HaBamis, right, we have to understand how they work. And that's what he's going to describe now, right? And that's why he gives this mashal about two cities, or sorry, one city that the two kings are fighting over. Why? Because when we talk about what each king wants, they don't just want to have some power in the city. They want to have total power, right? If you understand, the Nefesh HaBamis, initially when we're born, and how we grow up, our Nefesh HaBamis and Nefesh HaLakis are total odds with each other. They don't want to make room for each other. They each want complete control on everything, right? Now, almost like the sad news is that that's not the sad news, actually, just the reality, because that's the design of the person. Because I want to just explain what he's going to be explaining here, right? He's going to explain how it works, like what the Nefesh HaLakis wants, and then the same as the Nefesh HaBamis, right? And essentially, what the Nefesh HaLakis wants really is for us to be a tzaddik. Nefesh HaLakis doesn't want to make room for the Nefesh HaBamis. Doesn't want to share control at all. Right? And same to Nefesh HaBamis. Nefesh HaBamis doesn't want us to be a tzaddik at all. Wants us to be a rasha, actually. Because it wants complete control. Meaning, they want, because it has to do not just what, this is why I was saying before, the difference between the Nefesh HaKis, the Yetzer Tov, the Yetzer Hara, and Nefesh HaKis, Nefesh HaBamis. The Yetzer Tov, the Yetzer Hara is a struggle about what we're going to do today. It's not about who we are today. Right? The Nefesh HaLakis and Nefesh HaBamis are fighting for the identity of the person. Now, why is that so important to know? And let me strengthen the question. Because for most of us, we're never going to solve this war. You know that? No, that's true. That's what it is. Because that's a Beinoni. A Beinoni, which most people are either Beinonis or striving Beinonis, in fact, most of us are striving Beinonis, aspiring Beinonis. Aspiring for something, by the way, they will probably never reach. It doesn't matter. That's part of it. That's part of what the human design is about. So there's always going to be that struggle, right? So then why do I need to know that the Nefesh HaKis wants my identity to be Nefesh HaKis, Nefesh HaBamis wants my identity to be Nefesh HaBamis, right? Because like I've said to you many, many times, Siddhus always gives us the highest bar because that makes a difference to our headspace and it changes the whole perspective and it gives us a different way of looking at things which then makes a dent in how we behave. Are we going to come tzaddikim? No, we're not even supposed to become tzaddikim. Not only that, we're probably not even become bayanim. They say about a great chassid called Reb Hillel Paracher. Reb Hillel Paracher, before he came to the Alter Rebbe, he was already a very, very great person. And he was very, what they would call a tzaddik, I suppose, right? He was a spiritual person, he was a great Talmud Chacham. And then he started to learn Tanya, and he said that before he started to learn Tanya, he thought he was a tzaddik. Now he didn't say, I think I'm a Beinoni. He says, now I think, halavai Beinoni. I wish I could be a Beinoni. I probably was a Beinoni, but it doesn't matter. Okay, right? But it doesn't matter because the idea is to have as I've said to you many times, Chassidus comes and wants to change our perspective, right? Tanya wants just to, and then that new perspective should change the way it'll make a dent in our behavior. So I'll give you an example, right? If we understand what the Nefesh HaKis wants and we understand what the Nefesh HaBamis wants, so first of all, we understand the struggle. It's important to know our Nefesh HaBamis. And it's important to know what the Nefesh HaBamis is trying to do. It's also important to know what the Nefesh HaKis is trying to do. Because when we understand the Nefesh HaKis is trying to not just make us do good things, it's trying to make us be completely God-centered, that our whole identity should be God. Now, are we going to act that way all day? No. Because first of all, we still have a Nefesh HaBamis to worry about, right? Sometimes we can listen to Nefesh HaBamis, for sure, right? But it gives us a whole different approach of how we do a mitzvah, of how we pursue godliness, of how we try to grow, right? In other words, we try to grow in a way that we want to listen to Nefesh HaKis, which means we don't just do mitzvahs every day. That's not what Tanya came for. If you want to do mitzvahs, you can open up a Shulchan Aruch and it'll tell you what to do every day, right? It's much more than that. It's about having a whole perspective to be godly. It's about using everything in our life for godliness. Now, when I say that, that's easy to say and very hard to fulfill. And none of us are going to get that. But it's an approach which we take. It's an approach to wake up in the morning and say, how can we make today godly? Or we land up in a situation, right? It's got to do with everything, by the way. It's got to do even with bitochen, for example, right? It's got to do with the perspective that everything that happens to us must have a purpose. And therefore, how can I use it out? What can I do? How can I use this to serve Hashem? It's got to do with the perspective of landing up in a place that you're stuck there for 6 months, you don't want to live there. But you have your Nefesh HaKis perspective, then, no, I'm supposed to be here. Therefore, how can I use this out to serve Hashem? Obviously, if I'm here, right? It includes every part of our life. Now, do we have that constant consciousness? No, but we have to understand what it is so that we develop that idea, that mindset, that headspace, that dent that we can make to be a little bit closer to that perspective. Yeah, is that making sense? Right. But for now, we need to understand what it is, right? So, and it's important to understand, I think I've told you this story before, but it's important to understand this because when we know what we're dealing with, it's easier to, you don't necessarily conquer it, but at least you know what you're dealing with. So that story I heard from a great chassid called Ramatl Kazlina. And he was a chassid in Russia and he was under the communism because it was very tough and it was a terrible regime. And in communist Russia, everyone had to have a job. That's how it worked. There was no unemployment. There was no such thing. And you had to have a job. So this particular chassid, he had a factory. And he employed some older chassidim. It was like a chassidish factory. He employed like great people, like Ramatl Futterfass, these people. And they worked in the factory. They were his employees. One day, lunch break, he comes out. And I think I told this story before. He sees them having like a little fabring in the middle of the lunchroom. Sing a nigun, they're sharing the Torah, they're saying l'chaim, and they're using out a lunch break, like, you know. What do you have a lunch break for? To serve Hashem, right? So, and he lost it. He started screaming at them. He said, you guys crazy? This is illegal. We need to get us arrested. We'll be sent to Siberia. And he gives them, like, he screams at them for like 5 minutes. He stops, calms down, leaves the room. Comes back a few minutes later with a bottle of mashke, and he says, "You for bringing, say l'chaim." So they look at him like, "You've gone crazy? Like, have you like lost your mind? 5 minutes ago you were screaming at us, and now you're helping us?" So he said, "I don't know if you don't understand. It's very simple," he says. "I lost it a few minutes ago. That came from my nefesh abamis. Because I have anxiety. I'm always on the watch of the communists there. But that was it. Okay, so my nefesh, I'm not in full control of my nefesh abamis, so it screamed." He says, "But then I went away and I thought about how I was educated. When I was educated, my parents taught me that when you see chassidim having a fabregan, you should give them a little bit of mashke to say l'chaim so they can enhance their fabregan." So here we are. So this chassid, who I knew very well, he used to visit Australia every year, he told a story about the chazinas. He said, because why is it an important story? We're not under communist Russia, we know this issue, but it's important to know where something's coming from, right? In every part of life, for example, a person can be anxious about something. We know that anxiety is not a good thing. To take control of anxiety is a very bad thing. It's a very hard thing, right? But you have to know, when you're worried about something that's out of your control, it's coming from your nefesh abamis. Now, does it mean you can control it right away? No, but it means you have the perspective, at least, if I know it's coming from nefesh abamis, it means something I have to work on, right? Sometimes we do things that represent an ego thing, right? A person can feel threatened by someone else, a person can be... None of us are completely humble. We all have an ego, right? But when you know where it's coming from, you know that you have to try and curb it a little bit, right? Because you know the nature of the person. You know the nature of the enemy. And same with Nefesh HaKis. You know the nature of the Nefesh HaKis is trying to do. You're trying to live by the Nefesh HaKis. Your whole perspective changes. And then it makes a dent in how we behave. Yeah? Naturally more powerful. Yeah, because he says later in Talia. Yeah, exactly. That's why it's avodah. We will serve to serve Hashem. We have to keep fighting. But the fight is very precious to Hashem. You make one dent in that of Shabbos. It's the most amazing thing. That's why, you know, that's why people misunderstand this, because people find it difficult nowadays to think in a nuanced way. But I saw Hasidim that were very critical of the Nefesh HaBamis, of their own Nefesh HaBamis. And he's put themselves down all the time, and they're the most happy people, right? Because knowing that we have a very powerful clipper should not make us upset. It should make us alert, right? But it's also an amazing simcha to know that we have such a big nefesh abamis, and yet if we're able to even one dent make it, that it's the most amazing thing, and Hashem has such nachas. That's incredible. But you're right, nefesh abamis is more powerful, and later on in Tanya, we'll learn it when we get there, Mr. Hashem, but it says, you know, on the Thursday morning show, I've been talking about the conscious self and the real self. So he says that for most people, consciously, they work on the nefesh abamis. We've got to work hard to connect with the nefesh abamis. That's the struggle of man. That's okay. Once in a while, we've got to beat up on nefesh abamis a little bit, just get it under control. But it shouldn't bring to negativity. It's not a negative. It's sometimes it's tough. We have to be tough on nefesh abamis sometimes. But
it's the way it's meant to be.
It's the way it's meant to be. And we should do it. And when we do it, sometimes it's very uncomfortable, but then we have to be besimcha, because that we have the opportunity to do that. That we can learn a Tanya, we can know what to do. And we can get it under control a little bit. We can move closer to our Hashem, even 1 millimeter. That's the simcha that comes from. Okay. So let's see. So now, sorry, I'm jumping ahead here, because we really should. Okay. So he says like this. So for the most of the chapter, the most of the remainder of the chapter, he actually describes the Nefesh HaKis's role, like what it wants to do, which is easier to understand. Now, I'm going to warn you, what it's going to describe is not something we can reach, because we are going to be left with both Nefesh HaKis and Nefesh HaBamis. But he describes what the Nefesh HaKis wants in its own right. Basically, it wants us to become a tzaddik, basically, right? Which is not going to happen, but a real tzaddik, I'm saying, a true definition of tzaddik, right? He says, okay, Shalakis, the Nefesh HaKis, Cheftza or Ritzoyna, its will, its desire, Shetehei, He, Levadu, Hamoy, Shele, Salam, Ligoth, it should be the sole controller, the sole leader of the body, the city, as he calls it. Every organ and every limb that we have should be completely obedient to its instructions. And completely subservient to it. Right? Not only that, Umerkova Eileha. It should be a Merkova. There's a famous line in Hasidus. Merkova means to be a chariot, a wagon. What does it mean? What's a wagon? a wagon. It's in the Zohar it says that Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, the others, the patriarchs, the matriarchs, they were a wagon to godliness. What does that mean? A wagon has no will other than the will of its driver, right? You pull the reins and it turns right. Pull the reins on the left, it turns left, right? Doesn't argue with you. Just that's what it does, right? Yeah. So Nefesh HaLakis basically wants the body to become its wagon. Nefesh HaLakis says, light Shabbos candles, you do it. You stock, you do a mitzvah, it does it right away, right? Okay, that's what it is. Number one. Number two, it wants, it just describes a different thing Nefesh HaLakis wants. V'yu levush le'esa b'chino yiseo. It wants the body to become a means of expression, a garment, for all the 10 levels of the Nefesh HaLakis. U'shloish le'vushan yizkarim li'ul, and the thought, speech, and action, as we said before. She'islap shukulam be'evar yaguf. In other words, the Nefesh HaLakis wants that its chokhma, bina, das, chesed, gvura, and thought, speech, and action should just flood the body, and the body should just be a means to express the 10 garments and the 3 expressions of the Nefesh HaLakis, right? As we learned before. That's what it wants. So I just want to explain this a little bit, because actually saying two things here. He started by saying that Shalakis wants the body to be a Merkava, right? And then he says he wants it to be a Levush, a garment for its 10 powers and 3 expressions and so on. He's saying the second thing is actually deeper. When a rider, like I'll give you an example, like, you know, we have a neshama in a body, right? So the body is like a garment for the neshama. It's a way you express the neshama. So take a rider riding a wagon. So the wagon is totally subservient to the rider, correct? But the wagon is something separate to the rider. But deeper than that, the Nefesh HaLakis wants something deeper than that. He doesn't only want the body to be a chariot, a wagon. Nefesh HaLakis wants the body to become its garment. It's a means of expression of the neshama. That's much greater bonding. Right, it's not just doing its will, but it's becoming completely connected to it. It wants the body to not be a separate entity. It wants the body to become something that's completely one with the neshama. V'yaguf kulei molei behem levadom v'lo yaves zorbos toichem chas v'sholem. And he wants the entire body to just be filled with the nefesh HaLakis and all its components without any interference whatsoever, which is a tzaddik essentially, right? That's what nefesh HaLakis is. It wants complete dominance. Not just complete dominance, it wants every part of the person's physical and animalistic body to be completely one with the Nefesh HaLakis and in sync with the Nefesh HaLakis, right? So he explains, he says, Leois, sorry, no, there's a part here which I didn't, I'm reading from a different time, so I'm just one. Now, what he does is he goes, I'm not going to go through everything inside, he goes and he describes really what that means, and it means an unbelievable love of Hashem, an unbelievable fear of Hashem. And he says that he wants the Nefesh HaLakis even to flood the headquarters of the Nefesh HaBamis. What's the headquarters of Nefesh HaBamis? The part of that heart which is pumping of the Nefesh HaBamis needs to be flooded by the Nefesh HaLakis. Why? So that every part of the love that is possibly generated by Nefesh HaBamis should be only directed towards Nefesh HaLakis. And he gives the thing that the person should get such a madrega, because, you know, he talks later in Tanya also about different levels of love of Hashem. So what we call there's Avo Kirush Be'esh, there's love of a fire, and there's even a deeper love. It's called Avo Betanugim, a love of pleasure. Right? What does that mean? So it works like this, right? Fiery love is very, very explosive love, but it's also love that comes like with a struggle. It's like it's right? And then there's something deeper, like with Nefesh HaBamis. What does Nefesh HaBamis want all day? It just wants to have physical pleasures. It has an incredible power of Tainuk, right? That Tainuk needs to transfer the Nefesh HaLakis according to Nefesh HaLakis, right? So that a person should have what's called Avav Tanuk, which means that we are so in love with Hashem that we don't even have to work. It's not even romantic anymore. It's just our whole pleasure. It's just what we just love doing. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's natural. I think of someone that just the whole day fresses pizza. The Nefesh HaLakish wants us the whole day just to be basking in the glory of Hashem. Just to love and enjoy Hashem's presence and mitzvahs and Torah the entire day. Which of course means that every single moment is used for mitzvahs, every single moment is used for Torah. Every single moment is just used for the service of Hashem and so on and so forth, right? Now, towards the end of the parak, we'll finish with that. If you go, he says, just go to the next page, 28. Last three lines of the chapter says, "Ach nefesh habamis." However, the nefesh habamis, shem haklipa comes to the klipa, ritzoyno lahepach mamish. Its desire is completely the opposite. That's a powerful statement, right? In other words, it really wants the nefesh habamis to have nothing to do with anything. Nefesh habamis wants you to be completely egocentric. Now, obviously, a lot of times it's a mixture. You have people that are very animalistic and very materialistic, but nevertheless, they still do mitzvahs. Right? That's fine. That doesn't mean that it has complete dominance, nor does Nefesh HaKis have complete dominance. But the Nefesh HaKis starts off, I mean, Nefesh HaBami starts off by actually the exact opposite of the Nefesh HaKis. Nefesh HaBami wants you to be a complete animal without letting godliness in at all. It wants you to be completely egocentric, completely inwards, and completely pleasure-driven. And that's also so important to know. Because we have to know the danger of the Nefesh HaBamis. Why it's so important to work with it, why it's so important to curb it, why it's so important to get under control. Because the Nefesh HaBamis works that the more you leave it, the more it becomes stronger. And it won't stop until it's got complete control. It's not like a person says, you know, my Nefesh HaBamis is fine, okay, wants me to indulge in the pleasures of this world, but it doesn't mind if I put on tefillin and keep Shabbos. That's actually not true. If you let it, if you don't work with it, if you don't work hard, it will stop at nothing until it's got complete dominance, complete control over you. Now, he throws in a very interesting line. He said, "He says, its desire is complete opposite. Why is it like that? Actually, letoivas ha'odam. It's all for the good of the human being. Nefesh HaBamis is not actually bad. She is gabrielia. The purpose is. Our purpose is to overcome the Nefesh HaBamis, to resist it, to work hard, to fight. That's our purpose. And by the way, that's such an important thing to understand because people often complain about the fight. Why is it so hard? Now, obviously, we want it to be not too hard, right? We want Hashem to help us. We keep on davening every day, Hashem not to test us. But when there's a struggle, we need to know struggle is important. In fact, the struggle, the journey of the struggle is as important as the outcome itself. That is part of serving Hashem, is to struggle. I don't mean struggle with physical things, Chas v'Shalom, Hashem should bench everyone with all they need. But the struggle, the internal struggle against Nefesh HaBamis, that is part of serving Hashem. That's why we have to work hard at it and do it b'simcha. Because that's exactly what Hashem wants. And it is hard. But every time we make a dent, that's a victory. We haven't got to the destination yet. That's not about that. It's about understanding the destination, even at the highest level, so we know where we're going to. But it's about, say, someone, he's talked about anger before. Someone gets very, very angry, tries to fight it, even unsuccessful for a long time, but he's still trying and eventually makes a small dent. That struggle is part of serving Hashem. That is the serving Hashem. And he says, she's gabrielah to overcome it. The goal, the destination is v'natzchena, to be victorious over it. K'moshel hazoyna shebezoyer HaKadosh. Very interesting thing. He says it's like the analogy that's given in the Zohar of a prostitute, which is, what does that mean? It's a person, it's a king who had, it's a whole moshel the Zohar gives about a king that had a son, a prince, and he wanted to toughen up the prince and make him really a strong person. So he took him to what we call the place where prostitutes hang around, and he sent someone there to seduce him. And the person going there is a servant of the king. So that woman doesn't want the son to say yes, but she'll do everything in her power to make him say yes, because that's her job, right? And that's what the Nefesh HaBamis is. Nefesh HaBamis is a servant of Hashem. We only believe in one thing in Yiddishkeit. We don't have the devil. You know what I'm saying? There's no two entities here. It's one entity. Nefesh HaBamis doesn't want us to listen, but it's going to try everything it possibly can to listen. It's going to act as the enemy. That's what it's going to do. And we have to treat it like the enemy. Why? It's for our good. Why is it for our good? Why does the king have to do that? Why can't the king just protect and have the son be in the palace and be protected? Because that's not the purpose. Then we didn't need this world altogether for that. We could have been angels. Shouldn't it, right? The purpose of creation is to transform evil, to transform bad into good, to overcome bad, to have the struggle. That's the purpose. And that's the fight, as he introduces now the fight between the Nefesh HaKis and the Nefesh HaBamis. And then in the next chapter he's going to define what a tzaddik is and what a rasha is, and then eventually get to, okay, so what do we do? What's the Beinoni? In other words, basically he's going to talk about most people. We have the struggle, and how do we fight the struggle? How do we overcome the struggle? That's the next few chapters. Good.